Well, good morning to all of you. Thank you for the welcome. It's good to be with you this morning and to share something about mission. Yegvan has introduced me. I am a Scot living in exile in the south of England, but I remain a Scot at heart. I come from Aberdeen. Some of you are quite familiar with Aberdeen, may have visited there. I went to school there. I studied medicine in Aberdeen, and it was from Aberdeen that God called us to go to Africa, where I served as a, in missionary medicine for 11 years when I was young. 31 years ago we left, and these have been fulfilling years as we've been able to serve God, continuing to support mission as well. So it's good to be with you. This is my second visit to the Faroes. The last time I was here, you were in the old school building, and it's good to know you're growing as a church. I hope that you're growing as well as numbers and depth and mission vision, because any growing church will have mission at the heart of what it does. Mission in the community, mission in your society, mission in your country, and mission throughout the world. The two go together. We divorce them too often, but they do go together. So it's a pleasure to be here and to share. And I'm also enjoying the sunshine in Faroe Islands. Last time I was here, it was grey and cloudy all the time. So although I saw some of the beauty, now I'm really understanding how beautiful it is in this part of the world. So thank you for your welcome. Now this morning, I want to talk to you about mission and try and go through a presentation together. We'll see, we might not catch all of the slides here, but it's called The Changing Face of Mission in the 21st Century. This is what Yegvan asked me to cover. And I hope that we can stretch your minds in the short time that we have here to our responsibility to understand the age where God puts us and to serve God in our generation. You know, I often say to folk, my father served God in Scotland back in the 1950s and the 1960s into the 1970s. A very different world, a very different society. And I thank God for him and for the work he did. I'm called to serve God in a different world, different generations, same message, but sometimes it's got to be presented in a different way. So what are some of the characteristics of a world today? What I'm going to do is I'm going to take this off because I might need to turn and see what's coming up. So I'm saying the right things at the right time. The world we live in is marked by two significant factors today. Two significant factors. It's marked by this increasing global stability. I don't know if you thought the world was going to get better and better and better until we all live in universal peace and harmony and prosperity. Well, if you believe that, you've obviously not read your Bibles. You've not listened to what Jesus said. Because Jesus said that as this age progresses, you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See to it that you're not alarmed. Such things must happen. Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginnings of birth pangs, the birth pangs of the new age that will dawn when Jesus comes back again. Now, are we at the end of the age? I don't know. We might be. I'll leave that to Yegvan to sort that out for you, perhaps next Sunday. And people have looked at the world and said, Christ's coming must be very near. I don't know. But say, no one knows the day or the hour, and we're called to be ready. But we should not be surprised about the problems that are arising in the world today, because Jesus said that's what would happen until as we approach the end of the age. So we are living in a very dangerous world today. The world is dangerous. And many of the most needy places in mission today are the most dangerous. So the challenge to our generation is, what sort of risks are we willing to take in service for God? When missionaries left the UK and elsewhere to go to Africa 150 years ago, as one of their items of kit, they took a coffin. Because life expectancy was 18 months. And they didn't turn back, and they sent for others to come and join them. So risk, terrorism, insecurity is there. Christian martyrdom is still a reality, an increasing reality in our world today. And in a sense, our story for the kids in the first service this morning illustrated some of the risks that will be faced in some dangerous parts of the world. Or are we too comfortable now, we Westerners, because I'm a Westerner and you're Westerners, largely most of you here today. Apologies to those who perhaps come from other parts of the world. But we're comfortable, we're secure, and we're risk averse. Every organisation in the UK now has to do a risk analysis. Do you have to do that here? Risk to your company, risk to your organisation. We have one in our mission group so that we can take measures to avoid risk. How can you avoid risk in service for God? And so it's hard to follow Jesus. Not only Gail Williams, who was killed a few years ago in Afghanistan, but many others, many Christians in the Middle East today who follow Jesus, find life is very tough and very hard. And we shrink back from suffering, don't we? We shrink back from persecution. The only reason there is persecution is because there's life. If there was no life, there'd be no persecution. So perhaps we should be praying for a little bit of persecution to come to our nations, because it might sort out, if you like, the wheat from the chaff. So it's hard to follow Jesus. And if you're a Christian in India today, in Orissa, in some of the northern states, you might find your church set on fire. You might find your home destroyed. Yes, it is hard to follow Christ. The world is insecure and dangerous. But the world today is changing as well. The earth is flat. The world is flat. Now, do you think I don't know anything about geography? This means that it's taken a title taken from an excellent book by Thomas Friedman, an American journalist, showing that with globalization, all the barriers in the world are coming down today. And the world is more accessible than at any other time in history. And if we can't get in as Christian missionaries, we can find other ways to get in with the gospel of Christ. Everywhere in the world is accessible in 27 hours. And where you're sitting at the moment, even in the remote Faroe Islands, you can reach any other part of the world if you get your connections and there's no hash cloud and so on within 27 hours. That's how accessible the world is. And what it means is that everyone in our world now is chasing prosperity. That's the dream of all, the American dream, the Western dream. We want a better life. Why not? We owe it to ourselves, don't we? The problem is that that comes with spiritual downsides if we cannot hold what God has given us in a balanced way. So the world is flat today. The world is very unequal today. Despite improving lifestyles in many parts of the world, we still have the issue of rich against poor. And the question I say to Western Christians and I say to myself is, you know, not to judge myself for my prosperity, but to realize that God will judge me for how I use my prosperity. Did I hold it selfishly to accumulate so I could retire and cruise around the world for the rest of my retirement? Or did He give me resource so that I could pass it on? I'm a member of a Christian trust in the UK called the J.W. Lang Trust, a very large Christian trust, set up by a man called John Lang, who became a very prominent businessman and industrialist. When John Lang died, there was £87 in his bank account. All the rest of his funds were set aside for Christian work. That is stewardship of prosperity in a way that still today is advancing the work of the kingdom of God. So how do we rich Christians? You might not feel you're rich, but compared to the rest of the world you are, use the prosperity that God has given us, because the world is unequal. And then something else about the world today. The world is still very, very religious. And we might feel that secularism is winning the day. As we see it, we certainly see it in Britain. What is called the New Atheism is very militant, and our young people are bombarded by this. But of a world population of 6.6 billion, it's now over 6.7, 6.8 billion, 4.64 billion follow other religions. So do we think the world is reached today, folks? Do we think the mission task is finished? Just have a look at these statistics. There are 1.4 billion Muslims, nearly over 900 million Hindus, and over 400 million Buddhists, some of whom have never had a meaningful encounter with the gospel of Christ. So the world is still very religious, and these are some of the challenges we face today. But alongside that, there is something remarkable happening. You know, you can look at that and think, how can we do anything? There is, in our generation too, the global preaching of the gospel in an unprecedented scale. Someone has said now there is no nation in the United Nations, the 40 nations that make up the United Nations, there is not a single nation today where there is not some form of the Church of Jesus Christ. Now that form may be small, it may be underground, but there is some form of the Church of Jesus Christ in every nation today. First time in history. Now that doesn't mean to say that in every people group and every ethnic group in these nations the gospel is penetrated, but that has happened, and much of this has happened in my lifetime in the last 50 years or so, when Jesus said the gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to the nations, and then the end will come. So alongside the instability, alongside the problems of the age as it winds to its close, there is also the promise of Christ that the gospel is going to be preached to the nations before he returns again. And that is happening in our generation too. It's happening remarkably. If you look at this growth, and I don't know if you'll see this today, you might patch it, okay? That is evangelical growth in the last 50 years, from 1960 to 2010. This brown line here, the darker brown line, is in the West, but there has been growth. It's not stopped. Praise God, something is still happening in the West. God is at work. But look what's happened in the non-West, from 1970 going way beyond us and taking off. And that's where the growth is. In the majority world, as we call it now. The majority world, because that is where most of the people now live. And if you look at this graph here, all right, can you make this out? West, non-West, 1960, number of evangelical Christians by 2000, far overtaken by the non-West. That is Africa, that is Latin America, that is Asia. And if the Lord doesn't come by 2040, that is what is predicted to happen. Now, of course, predictions for the future are usually proved to be wrong, but that is the trend happening in our world today. So alongside the anxieties that we have about the instability of our world, we should be full of great joy to God for what he's doing. And how is he doing this? Is he doing it through Western mission workers? Yes, he is. Thank God that we have a significant role to play. Well, one of the things that's impressed me as I've traveled in the last few years is this changing concept of the mission field. Okay, I grew up in Britain, and Britain has been a sending country for many years. So our concept of the mission field is from here to there. Mission is what we do across the seas. And so that's how we feel, and probably you could shift these lines up to the Pharaohs, and that might be your concept of mission as well, isn't it? What we do over there, and if I was speaking to a North American audience, of course I would transfer the arrows as they're coming from the United States. But the changing concept mission nowadays is from everywhere to everywhere, because that's what's happening in our age, so that people are, excuse me, that went too quickly, are crossing all sorts of barriers, leaving Central Africa, moving to the Middle East, moving from China across back towards Jerusalem, from Papua New Guinea into Western Papua, from Latin America to Africa. People are moving around as God is stirring these countries that used to receive mission workers to now send their own, often with great sacrifice. The country where I serve God is Zambia. Zambia has now become a mission-sending country. They have a mission training school in Zambia called Pro Cristo, which is now linked to OM, where they train Zambians in cross-cultural mission and they send them to the Middle East, to other African countries, to elsewhere. And God is at work now in the nations. Thank God for that. We should be full of praise. And so, as we move around, you find Indian evangelists, a huge mission force in India now, or Japanese nurses, not serving in Japan, they're serving in Pakistan. Easier for them to do that because they're not so obvious, they're not Western, so therefore there's not a natural suspicion towards them, or Thai workers among their own people, people serving in Hong Kong and schools, Pakistani church planters, this fellow Abdul, I've known him for 15 years, a remarkable man who felt God called him to singleness, who has trained young Pakistani men as Muslim evangelists, who has planted 15 churches in the last 12 years or so, the largest of which would be 400 to 500 people. So God is at work even in Pakistan with all its chaos and all the Talibanization that's going on there too. Keep going. You've got people in Peru who are sending missions in Mexico, Rwanda, Jordan, Ethiopia, Angola, Congo, and Myanmar. There you see God at work, raising up a generation of young people from their own nation with a passion to take the gospel to their own people and beyond. Have we lost the vision? Have we lost that passion? Are we still concerned? Are we so comfortable where we are that we'd take an atom bomb just to about move us and get us shifted? Okay, some of the issues in the world today. So we've talked about our world, all right, the risk and the security and what God is doing. The second point we want to cover is this: what then should be some of our mission priorities in the 21st century? And in a sense, you've got to work out what they are, but I want to give you some general principles here. And we're just going to look at four today, but we face the challenge of Islam, and this must be one of the greatest challenges that we face. The cities of our world, the issue of re-evangelizing Europe, and poverty, HIV, AIDS. Islam is a huge challenge. Not just there in the Middle East, we see it in our own city of Bristol. I go to church in inner city Bristol. If I drive to church in a certain way, I will pass a large Quranic school going into a school like this called Bristol City Academy. Hundreds of Muslims going in. Our old church building that we left 70 years ago is now a Sikh temple. Down the road from us, Bristol City Mission is now a mosque. So you see it in our own cities in Britain. Islam is a challenge. There are the major Islamic countries, as you see them there today across the Middle East, which still need to be reached. And as I was saying, the challenge of Islam is not just across in the Islamic nations, but it's coming into Western culture as well. Andrew's here from Denmark, and he would probably be able to talk about Islam becoming more obvious in Denmark. It's certainly obvious in France. It's become obvious in the UK, and I know you have a Fides worker, don't you, working down in Birmingham, reaching Muslims there as well. Thank God for that. Islam has been neglected for many years in mission because it's been thought to be too hard. But nowadays, one in five of the world's people are Muslims. They form the majority in about 40 countries. There are only 2 to 3 Christian missionaries per million Muslims. That's still a very tragic statistic, isn't it? Very tragic. And something that perhaps is being righted a little bit, but presents an issue to us. But of course, Muslims are being reached. We can sometimes think, what can we do, and fail to look at what God is doing in Iran, what he's doing in Algeria, what he's doing in some areas of Turkey, what he's doing even in Pakistan. I see my colleague John up there, and he was in Pakistan in February, and there he was able to witness that in Pakistan, God is at work as well. So Muslims are being reached through satellite television, through the internet, through Bible correspondence courses, by a variety of means, they are being reached with the gospel. But Islam is a huge challenge for mission in the 21st century. The challenge of our cities, often neglected because we go to the remote places with the gospel. Now, the remote places need to be reached. But in our world today, half the world now live in cities. An increasing percentage of the world are living in cities. I was hearing on the way here this morning how Tórshavn is growing and developing as people are moving to the cities. That's where half the world's population live. And here are some of the great cities of the world. Look at the population figures there. Of places like Mumbai and Bombay. I was speaking at a conference in Scotland a few years ago, and there was a worker from Zambia sharing it with me who had been there, and he said, I didn't realize there are twice as many people in Bombay as there are in Zambia. Twice as many people in one Indian city as there are in a whole African nation, and often we neglect them because they're difficult and they present challenges. But cities also can be reached, and they can be reached like cities in Pakistan through church planting and through schools, working into the community and finding methods that are appropriate to reach people who live in cities. Let's move on. A challenge for mission in the 21st century is re-evangelizing our own continent, Europe, which probably is the only continent in the last 15-20 years where the church has not shown any significant growth. In Europe, knowledge of the Bible is minimal. It's a sophisticated and fast continent. Lives are full of things. They're empty of God. And we face the challenge of re-evangelizing our own continent in our generation. And I think this statement of Tim Keller in the book, The Reason for God, is very, very important. Western society is a mission field, perhaps the most challenging mission field yet, because no one has had to evangelize on a large scale a society that used to be Christian. And he says that many people have been immunized, inoculated against the gospel by the type of Christianity they have seen. So those of us who are working in Western society, and perhaps your situation in Faroes is not quite as advanced because of the state church and because of the progress of the gospel here, but if you move across to European nations, we will find this is a massive challenge for our generation. We are Europeans. It must be our responsibility to work to re-evangelize Europe. And then we face in our generation the issue of poverty, which is alive and well. Extreme poverty, living in $1 a day. Moderate poverty, $2 a day. Okay, none of us live in that. Way beyond that is income. But 2.7 billion live below $2 a day. And 1 billion below $1 a day. So how are we going to respond as rich Christians? Do we give or do we not give? Poverty affects women and children. They're the most vulnerable. Poor children are exploited because of poverty. Poor children have no voice. And so if we're going to serve God in many of the majority nations of the world, we will encounter poverty, and we've got to decide how we respond to this. It's not an easy issue. Our response can be to examine biblical teaching, because the Bible has a lot to say about poverty. And God's care for the poor and our response to poverty. We need to examine our own consumption, back to the same point, so that we're satisfied with adequate living and generous giving. And sometimes you do the opposite. We're content to have generous living and inadequate giving from time to time. And sometimes to poverty we can make an emotional response, and we need to consider how best we respond to the needs of the world in our generation. So these are some of the mission challenges of our world today that we want to put before you and challenge you about. Poverty and HIV AIDS. If you're going to work in Africa or you're going to work in areas of Asia, this will be part of your life as well. We won't spend more time on that. So let's just come and summarize as we come to an end. So what does biblical mission look like in our generation? Does it look any different? Has it got to change? Or how do we approach biblical mission? Well, remember that the key command and mission given by Jesus is go make disciples of the nations. And that command has never been removed and it's never been changed. As Jesus gave it to his first disciples, so it comes to us today. And how are we making disciples of the nations? This will involve a number of things. It will involve certainly preaching the gospel. The gospel is at the heart of mission. There is always a gospel priority in mission. There are other things that we do in mission, caring for the poor, and I ran a hospital and was involved in medical care, but we always had a gospel priority in what we do. So we must, in mission, communicate the gospel. This means that we know the message. We can articulate the message. We can present it. It means that we must know the culture, particularly when we move outside our own culture, so that we can present the gospel in an appropriate way. And very often we can take our own culture with us when we go to other parts of the world. A lot needs to be done as we cross cultures. And we need to know what are the best means to use. For example, I don't know if you do any open-air preaching in Faroe Islands. It's probably, like in Britain, not used very much nowadays. You certainly wouldn't attempt open-air preaching in Pakistan, would you? That's an inappropriate method to use there, although it may be effective in other parts of the world today. So you need to know what means to use in the different environments and the different cultures that you face. So involved in mission is preaching the gospel. But is that all that's involved in mission? Is it just an evangelistic imperative to make the gospel known? Involved in mission is also making disciples. Go make disciples of the nations. And very often in mission we have been very good at making converts, not quite so good at making disciples. But seeing these converts growing to maturity in Christ and becoming mature followers of our Lord Jesus Christ. So before we can make disciples, we need to be disciples ourselves, don't we? It's difficult to make someone else a disciple of Christ if my discipleship is weak. So before we engage in this task, we need to learn to know what it is to follow Christ, to count the cost and start on the path of genuine discipleship. We need to learn to lead. great need in the world today, wherever you look, and we were discussing this, is for leadership. And Christian leaders who model Christ and lead in a Christ-like way are an absolute huge need in our world today. We need to learn to lead, and then we need to learn to teach. So involved in mission is preaching the gospel, involved in discipleship. But of course, if the work of God is going to have a future, if it's going to become permanent, also involved in the mission task is the issue of planting churches. This is what Paul did. Paul preached, Paul taught, Paul planted. Paul moved on, he returned and he visited the churches and he strengthened them and he moved on. And this is a very good model to follow, planting churches. So this means we need to have a clear understanding of what the church is. We need to apply biblical, not cultural principles. Now, this can be very hard for any missionary who is called to church planting. As I move around the world, I can just about tell the country a missionary has come from and the ecclesiology of the church they have come from, the practices of the church, by the church, type of church they planted in another country. Because we carry a model with us. And so we need to be willing to examine what is the biblical model of church and, you know, what is our cultural model of church. So that is very important if God calls us into church planting ministry. And also we need to let go and move on. Apostolic ministry, Paul's ministry was mobile, wasn't it? He preached and he moved. He preached, he established, he moved. He revisited, he moved. And this can be very difficult for some mission workers when they've planted a church to know when to move on and hand over to others, to the leadership that they have trained. Preaching the gospel, making disciples, planting churches is all part of biblical mission. And there's a third area, which sometimes we neglect, and I think we have perhaps rediscovered this in recent years, that there is also a biblical imperative in mission, particularly among the poorer nations of the world, to get involved in caring for the poor. What's fascinating is that in the Galatians, when Paul and Peter are having a discussion about the future mission, Paul says they asked that we should continue to remember the poor. So that they saw as part of their mission task not only making Christ known, but caring for those in need. We need to be aware of the presence of the poor, where God sends us and calls us, realize that we can't discriminate against them, and we must be willing to help, and these are biblical commands. So that if God calls you to serve him in one of the poorer nations of the world, you may find this is part of your ministry, that you have a responsibility to care for those in need as well. World vision should be our mission as a church. Not just a vision for our community, but a vision that stretches beyond. And as we close, and you perhaps won't see the words I've highlighted here, but this is the vision that we find in the last book of the Bible, the book of Revelation. After this I looked, and behold, a great multitude that no one could number, from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and languages, standing before the throne, before the Lamb, clothed in white robes, with palm branches in their hands, and crying out with a loud voice, "Salvation belongs to our God, who sits on the throne and to the Lamb." That's the final vision. It's good to keep that before us. That's happening in our generation. God is calling people from all the tribes of the world. But he's still sending people. Still sending people from the Faroe Islands. Still sending people from Scotland, from England, from all the nations of the world to join this international force that he's raising up in our generation to fulfill his work and make Jesus Christ known. May God grant that we will be part of this as a church, either responding to God's call or sending those who God calls from our midst and supporting them in the work they do for God. It's been quite a quick passage this morning. I hope that you're not a bit dizzy with all the facts and figures, but I hope that God will use this to challenge our hearts to realize that in our generation, God has given us a great task and we can all be involved in this.